Hi, everybody. Absolutely fantastic episode of the show today. We start off with some NFT talk. We talk about Pudgy Penguins and the other winners of the month. We talk about OK Bears, among others. But then Ram Ahluwalia, the CEO of Lumita Wealth Management, ex-founder and CEO of Peer IQ, which had an exit in 2021, an ex-Wall Street investor, comes on the show. Definitely a highbrow guest for us. We are friendly with him. We went out to dinner with him and we invited him on the show. He's managing hundreds of millions of dollars of assets. He's an actual finance guy. And we have a kick-ass conversation with him. So I really sincerely recommend that you listen to this one. This one's very good. People were saying that they were taking notes on what Ram says. As you can imagine, as an institutional investor, he's incredibly savvy and knowledgeable. So really, really cool episode of the show. At the end, we also rip open Pokemon card packs from our courtyard.io collab drop. So overall, it's a great episode of the show. Hope you enjoy. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Friday, December 1st. Welcome to December 2023. You've tuned into the NFT Morning Show. We run the show Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern Time each and every week, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, X Spaces, YouTube, and more. Got a lot to dig into today. We're going to get right into the mix. Today, we're going to discuss Pudgy Penguins reaching a new all-time high, but nobody's really surprised about that. Come on now, guys. We're going to discuss whether or not this run is going to continue or if people should expect a pullback. We're going to talk about OK Bears and their huge collaboration with a major clothing retailer. And we, I think, are going to be joined by Ram Ahluwalia, the CEO of Lumita Wealth Management, to discuss all things macro and 2024 opportunities. Very, very exciting stuff. Want to actually make a little bit of a surprise announcement, ladies and gentlemen. So as many of you know, we collaborated with Courtyard on a drop on their platform this week, the Bodagos and Courtyard Pokemon card drop. Drop went live yesterday, and initially reveal was supposed to be on Monday in the afternoon, but we have twisted Courtyard's arm. You know, we were, you know, just twisting their arm, and we got them to move the reveal to 10 a.m. Eastern time today so we can reveal our cards live on the show. So we're going to rip our packs at the end of the show live, and we'll give away an additional pack to someone who rips their pack open alongside us and tweets out what they pull. So it's going to be really exciting. 10 a.m. Eastern time, doing a little live Courtyard pack rip reveal. Going to be a lot of fun. Never done that on this show before. Should be exciting. But before we go any further, gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
We're living well, man. Life is good. How are you doing? You look very dapper today. Professional, even.
I mean, we got Ram coming on the show. And so, you know, I had to, like, I figure, you know, got to dress it up a little bit if Ram's going to come on.
So he dressed up like a 16-year-old intern.
What do you mean a 16-year-old intern?
Was what he decided to do because that's how they think people show up to work.
This tie is imported from Spain.
Okay, well, I had imported ties when I was 16, so I'm just speaking.
Trust fun, baby.
I had some Macy's shit, to be honest, or like my dad's tie.
Oh, dude, I had wicked Macy's. I mean, when I look back, it's like really, it's pretty funny. Blade said I'm not wearing pants. I'm wearing sweatpants. Let's be real. I didn't put the pants of the suit on. Like, come on now. I'm just going to sit here. So there's no point in putting the pants on. I'm not going to make a big show of it the way Kevin O'Leary does. It's kind of weird. But yeah, so anyway, Clemente, how you doing, big boy? You got your Dunkin' Donuts bagel fix out?
Not today, not today. That bagel was actually terrible, I will say. The coffee was fine. Everyone says the coffee, Dunkin' Donuts coffee, is terrible. It gets the job done. You don't drink coffee for the taste. You drink because it gets you fired up, right? I drink
juice. Go to Italy.
Soda, yeah. The taste.
Yeah, coffee. Go to Italy. Let the Italians know you don't drink coffee for the taste. Let me know what they think about that. Well, look, we're just going to get right into the thick of it because we got a jam-packed show today. Signal, happy Friday. Let's get that weather report cooking.
Happy Friday, looking dapper on the stream, PO, loving the shirt and suit and tie combo. Friday, December the 1st, people, it is market volume. We're coming in close to 30 million. We're at 27.8. You got Blur at 20, OpenSea at 5, and Solana at 8.9. So a little bit of a pullback on yesterday's numbers. If we look at the market leaders, well, the top gainers, Moonbirds are up 22% to 2.3 ETH, Pudgies up 10% to 7.7, and Mad Lads just absolutely steamrolling to 180 Solana. Over the past 24 hours, the four big stories, well, number one, Pudgy Penguins are, of course, the winner of the day and possibly the year, as they are up 10% to whopping 7.7 ETH, officially reaching an all-time high since Nick bought them at the top almost 11 months ago. He bought them for 7.3 ETH. No doubt he probably has made a loss on that one. But little Pudgies are also up 40% in the last 7 days to 0.7 ETH, making gains for Pio, who bought some earlier in the week. So a little bit of hot competition between the two co-hosts there. On to our all-seeing Seneca, the lead designer behind Bored Ape Yacht Club, minted out Perils of Sese, a 2,880 supply collection for 0.22 each, raising over $1.3 million. It was a highly anticipated collection. Hasn't really moved much as we expected. The floor price is kind of hovering around the mint price, but it has recorded 400 ETH in trading volume in less than 24 hours. If we look over at crypto Bitcoin, that's the magic word. It has hit a new 2023 high following an overnight pump to 38,800. And the highest price since April 30th. PO's hero Mike Alfred tweeted, "Bitcoin and Ethereum are showing a lot of energy tonight. Something is brewing. December could be massive." Despite this, crypto is pretty much chopped for the last week or so, so we haven't had that massive brew that Mike's talking about just yet, but we could see it later in the month. And then lastly, Flamingo DAO, they got out their broom last night. They swept 448 ETH worth of various art collection, deployed nearly $1 million in less than 24 hours. They bought collections from almost every major artist. We're talking Beeple, Xcopy, Claire Silver, and lots more. And they still have almost 300 ETH left in the wallet as more sweeping is expected to come. That is all for the weather report, folks. It is back to you in the studio.
Fantastic weather report as usual. Signal Capital is being deployed. Congratulations to Nick for, I guess, selling a little Pudgy. You're rich.
No, I thought I still had that Pudgy because Clemente showed the wrong account. Instead, I sold it. So I sold it.
Yeah, you sold it a while ago.
11,500, which is, I mean, until a couple of days ago, still looked like a good move. But here we are. Now I'm down technically 5K on that deal.
I wouldn't worry about it, Nicky boy. Look, other updates from the Nifty Daily Digest, that's posted to X every day. It's also available for an email subscription at thenifty.com. The YouTube commenters right now are unrelenting commenting on me wearing a suit. Hey, look, Ram Alawalia is coming on the show. I had to show up in a suit. I didn't want to do the normal baseball cap and sweatshirt look for an actual investment firm manager. So anyway, okay, Bears. Saw a 30% pump to 37 Solana before pulling back after announcing a clothing line in partnership with Zara. Big name. Available in over 1,000 stores. Pretty wild. The team also shared that the holders of the licensed OK Bear will make 50% of the profit generated from this drop. I know NFT people love to hear that. Shout out to OK Bears for a huge partnership with a big, big name brand globally. Very, very cool stuff. We like the Bears. Moonbirds saw a 20% gain to 2.3 ETH following a huge sweep using Blend. Interesting to see some action out of the Moonbirds camp. Pudgy Penguins and Nouns DAO collectible, their collab collectible, is going to be officially dropping on December 8th, so 7 days from today. Very cool stuff from the Pudgy Penguins and Nouns DAO. It's a good-looking little toy right there. Raposa Coffee, Clemente ain't going to drink that. He just drinks Dunkin' Donut coffee. Raposa Coffee announced an Art Basel collaboration with D-Gods, and their cups collection saw a 2x run to 1.7 Solana. Easy. You bought these after their IRL activation at Breakpoint, didn't you?
I did. They were 0.6. Yeah,
very nice.
When you just see people all over the timeline and posting, because they had like this custom coffee machine where you put your PFP in the coffee, which was sick. It was just like a great marketing move all over social media. This D-Gods move is great. I've known the founder for the better part of 2 years now. I'm a huge fan of him. He's just been heads down working on stuff and trying stuff and innovating. They, after Breakpoint, went to the roastery, which is located in Europe. They're on Amazon, so you can order the coffees. Like, they're just doing everything right from like an actual business perspective, which is great. I probably had 30 of their canned coffees because they're just good. Like, they make good coffee, man. I'm a fan. I'm a big fan. And they have a business. Like, that's the crazy part. Everyone's like, NFTs can't be businesses. They're JPEGs. They have a business. Like, they make revenue. They make coffee. It's great.
Well, there we go. That's what I'm talking about. Shout out to Raposa. Love seeing the success. Just wanted to shout out a couple. I mean, look, some of these comments are pretty funny. Diesel93 asked why I look like a D3 sports anchor. That definitely, you know, I got a kick out of that. I think there's one more that I thought was really funny. Bernie said, Pio, don't let him speak to you like that. You look handsome. Love Nona implying that he is my grandmother. Pretty funny stuff right there for sure. Anyway, last story. Sniper launched a feature that allows users to buy NFTs on their marketplace with any SPL token like Bonk. I like the feature. I think that's a very cool feature from Sniper.
We're overlooking this though. It's going to be the easiest way to farm token airdrops, because now like Jupiter and Jito both already announced token airdrops and secondary phases for them. So now you can trade pictures and farm token airdrops all with one click. Like, that is the best part about it, is like, if you want to go on there and buy it in USDC, it'll swap it to Sol automatically with literally one click. So you can farm airdrops while trading pictures. So you can flip the pictures and farm an airdrop effortlessly. Like, I'm such a big fan of this, and they shipped it so quickly.
Well, there we go. So look, we're actually going to do and shout out to Sniper. They're our partners and we're big fans of them. We're going to do a recap of November right now. Winner of the month in November. At the beginning of November, if everybody remembers, we actually all declared what NFT collection we thought would have the best November from a percentage gain perspective. Me, Bunny, Signal, Easy, and Clemente all did it. I believe this was Nick's vacation week, so he didn't get a chance to participate. I'm sure he'll retroactively have a pick now, and it'll be the winner out of all of them. But it's actually funny. I forgot we did this until I'm reading it right now. The winner is Easy. Very nice, Easy. Good job. You picked Block Games Dice. And you made that pick right at the same time you picked that thing that we both bought that literally went to zero randomly within 4 days. That was not the best. I've been talking about that. I just do not understand how something could just go to zero so fast. But it reminded me of what NFTs can be like. So I'm glad that I was able to participate in that. But Block Games Dice, a 2X on the month to 0.57 ETH. I wish we had the tape handy to see what Easy said, because I wouldn't have been surprised if Easy said, like, send these to, 2X or something.
He literally called it. He literally called
0.6.
They were at 0.28 and they had just pumped 80%. He's like, no, they're going to do a 2X from here. And they did.
Very nice, Easy. I wish that I'd bought that one instead of the one that went to zero. Really cool stuff. Bunny came in second place. He said Mutant Apes were going to run. It was a 2% gain. So, Bunny, you had that 2% alpha. You got the Mutant Ape to run to 5.56. How do you feel about that?
I'm perfectly content with the second place victory. I think I took third the month before. I'm killing it in this competition so far.
You're on the podium. You get a medal. You had a bronze. Now you had a silver. It's pretty impressive, buddy. Good stuff. Keep meddling.
Where was Signal's play with 12 fold?
Bordinals, yeah.
Flat. So flat. It's not terribly surprising. I can't, there's not that. Ordinals is different in the 12-fold collection. I feel like, when's the last time one of these things sold? Okay, there's actually more liquidity. Two sales in the past week.
You're telling me two sales in the past week and I came in third.
Wow. Yeah.
So I got a medal. So I'm meddling against people who had more sales. You had more sales and you still lost to me.
But the sales were higher. They were over 0.9.
But the floor is 0.8.
But I think the calculation here may be a little bit misleading, and that Signal actually may have taken the trophy.
Well, it's not a 2X.
No, definitely not. It just wasn't a 2X.
They got 100% gain.
Signal didn't even like the skewed math. She couldn't even defend it. So
it was undefendable. It was just wrong. So anyway, next one, Clemente, tough month, Clemente. Sugartown Ore is down 16% to 0.21. Tough month, buddy. How you feeling right now?
Terrible. I had so much conviction on those. Afterwards, I bought like three of them and I ended up I bought them and I spent $50 on gas. And then I was like, oh, and then I staked them, paid an extra $40 in gas to be able to play the game. It was just a geometry dash game, and I was like, oh, this is not what I was expecting. And then I sold it, or it was like a Flappy Bird or something. And then I unstaked them, put them into bids, so I ended up spending $200 in gas. So terrible decision by me, but they're still holding. They're just not holding as much as I expected.
I will not trade a million times on the ETH side of the NFT space this cycle. I just can't do it. I can't get chewed up on gas fees like that. Anyway, last one, I chose SupDux and they're down 66%, but that's not a big deal. So anyway, the next story, I don't even remember why. Because the previous month I chose Guttercat Gang because of the acquisition.
You're on a buyout binge.
Yeah, it was a buyout bench. Yep. So Subducks not doing the best. Down 66%. Not the best competition for me. Last place after I believe I was in first or second place for the previous month. Might have been first. I don't remember, Clemente. You have to tell me. But anyway, next topic. Pudgy Penguins ripped to new all-time highs. Pudgy Penguins are up 11% in the past 24 hours to 7.78. That is an all-time Ethereum high. With Ethereum cooking a little bit, their previous high was 7.3 ETH in January 2023 with ETH at $1,500. ETH is now north of $2,000. Little Pudgies outperforming Big Pudgies, as we kind of see sometimes in the NFT space where the secondary cheaper collection has greater percentage gains. Those got up to 0.7 ETH. Nick, you have been very on point with your price predictions recently. You called Mad Lads, Kleinosaurs, and some others. If you had to pick an upside for Pudgy Penguins going into 2024, what do you think the potential upside for Pudgy Penguins is, call it in the next year?
At least 55,000.
Really?
Yeah. So I think, look, this is going to be competitive with Bored Ape Yacht Club.
Yep.
To Bunny's disdain and yep. frustration. This is, look, Azuki was a blue chip at one point in time. And
still kind of is.
Not really. And now they're mid-cap is what I would call them. They're a respected brand, I would say, by the NFT degens who buy them despite, like, I don't even want to get into the degen mentality, but it's one which is just abrasive and insulting. And if you were in, like, high school with them, you probably would have gotten in a fist fight with them no matter what. Like, that would have been the outcome because they were just so disrespectful to you. Despite you sitting there working away, you know, working in a carpentry class, you put together a nice shelf and that person comes over and says, yo, that shelf looks like shit, bro. And you're like, excuse me. And they're like, yeah, I'm gonna go outside and smoke weed and do nothing. And that's what happened in carpentry class, Pio. So. But the thing I was going to say here, Azuki, it's now mid-cap. So that's where they sit.
Okay.
And I think Pudgy has flipped them
yep.
and will continue to be pulled directionally towards a Bored Ape Yacht Club sort of situation. I don't know that they'll flip Bored Ape Yacht Club. They're two completely different offerings. But that said, I wouldn't be surprised to see this at a minimum at $25,000, if not. But like, I could see this going up to 50,000 in a bull run.
So I now own a Big Pudgy.
Okay.
I'm an owner of a Big Pudgy. I have two little Pudgies.
What did you buy the Big Pudgy at?
7.2. The previous night at 12:30 a.m. after our dinner with Matt Medved, I was staring at it at 6.2.
You just throwing out who we have dinners with?
Oh.
Feels anyway. Only up half an ETH.
Anyway, Nick, this feels like your type of bet, buying a Pudgy here and waiting a year and selling it for like 90 grand. Is that not a Nick bet?
No, usually that's not my bet. Most of my bets come at lower prices.
Oh, you're earlier. Nick's earlier.
Yeah, well, that's disrespectful. I'm going to be honest, your statement there. What I'm saying is like, you have two different categories of investments that you're making. You have high risk investments, and then you have what I would say is like the conservative bets that you're making in this space. Conservative is ridiculous. And so I just feel like the conservative is my like Solana, Bitcoin, Ethereum holdings. And then you have this other, component here. Clemente is pulling up comments left and right. It's just like because he's having a conversation himself with the audience. So that's what's going on. The thing I was going to say is the other category is the high-end bet. I bought a Punk for $90,000. That's the other category of bet. I'm looking at that being like, yo, that's a blue chip. That's where I'm operating on that particular bet. The transition from mid-cap to blue chip to me has less multiple upside than like your little Pudgy, for example. And I think that like, if I'm looking at those opportunities and I'm looking for a way to turn $1 to $10,000 into $200,000 plus sort of thing, I got to be looking for higher risk situations, and throwing the Pudgy on there, I don't know what I'm getting out of that. I think what I'm looking at now, what you're considering is maybe it's a moderate risk 5X.
Do you want to know exactly how I'm thinking about it?
Not really.
I feel like 10 Ethereum plus is programmed. And I think that's like actually like a pretty reasonable, you know, mindset when it comes to the Pudgy Penguins. And so I don't care if there's a pullback. I don't care what happens in like the next 6 months. I feel like inevitably, and I'm not thinking about it in US dollars, I'm actually thinking about it in Ethereum, because where we're at in the cycle is early in the cycle. And so when you're going up, you can think about it in terms of Ethereum. When you're going down, you want to think about it in US dollars for sure. So I'm like, well, if 10 ETH is programmed, the other thing is I know more about Pudgy Penguins than I do about like, you know, AVAX or like, you know, GambleFi and things like that. And so the whole bear market, everybody knows I was plowing money into Bitcoin, and then I plowed money into Ethereum. You know, the worst things are the higher your conviction has to be to plow money in. So that was like Bitcoin hardcore for a while, then getting into Ethereum, then getting into Solana between $18 and $24 hard. And that 2X, that's pretty nice. And I'm still going to buy that and still going to add to that bag. And then I got to NFTs, and my first significant NFT buys were the Mad Lad and the Klanosaur. And I actually took Ethereum and bought those with the Ethereum because I couldn't move my Solana. It was in a place where I couldn't move it, which I'm glad about. I'm glad that I turned that Ethereum into both those things, because those things did quite well. I then bought like a Jack Butcher. I bought Shrapnel, a few other things. I've deployed a lot of money in NFTs here. I view Pudgy Penguin as about as safe of an NFT bet as you can get, because like you pointed out, I do think it'll be relatively competitive with Bored Ape Yacht Club. I think that's a fair thing. I almost feel like the vision for Pudgy Penguins and the strategy is even more streamlined than Bored Ape Yacht Club at this
point. It is. It's way better, and Bored Ape Yacht Club is probably going to turn into a heaping pile of trash.
Well, I didn't know you were going to go that far. Bunny, have your hand raised. Bunny, what's going on?
Dude, it's so funny that there's any time a project starts doing like moderately well, this narrative comes into play. It's like when Uber blew up, and then any time someone started a startup after that, they're like, this is going to be the Uber of Tupperware, right? Or like whatever it was. It's like the LeBron James comparison. Like, any rookie who scores 30 points in a game is like the next LeBron James. No, dude, he's 6'9", 250, passes like a guard and jumps through the gym and is stronger than every player on the court. Like, it's not going to happen, dude. It's a one-time thing. It's like an anomaly, dude. It's not, like, it's a dumb comparison. And I love Pudgies, dude. Nothing against them.
Okay. Guy is coming through heavy right now. So that is, it is a difficult place to be. Hey, back to the high school sports announcer. What do you say about this?
D3 college sports announcer. Clemente, please.
Can I share one of the worst things I think I've done in trading NFTs in 2023? Look at my Lil Pudgy's trading history. So I bought one for 0.38, sold it for 0.28. I bought one for 0.38, sold it for 0.27. I bought one for 0.36, and then I weathed it for 0.35. What a disaster. Just a disaster of trading. I'm a
Solana trader with those moves.
I had so much PTSD from the bull market where I bag held so many things for like 6 months that my PTSD came in where I'm like, oh, I just literally have no conviction in these, and just paper handed three little Pudgies. So anyways, this is I just wanted to share that.
So Kix has this comment that Clemente's trading looks exactly like Nick.
In early 2022.
And that is the truth. So yeah. I was having this conversation, or we went to dinner last night, and I said, hey, last night I specified to the person, like, I just took $30,000 and just fucking threw it into the wind, basically, and just lit it on fire. It may have been closer to $40,000 after that. And so, Clemente, notice the pattern again right now, which you're experiencing. Just let's notice that how we're having that dialogue, and it's being infiltrated by your post pinning the comments. The Twitter users don't see this, so I want to apologize to them for some of this side commentary. I won't do that again. It was unprofessional. But that sort of trading behavior, I don't want to make that mistake again. And the biggest thing, I do like that you're at least buying Pudgy. It's not like you went and like put that much on some like random ass project that just dropped in the past 3 days that has this like ridiculous hype that everyone says is the future, which is a bunch of bullshit, which is what the D-Gen crowd always does. So, I mean, from that standpoint, I do think your investment is safe and secure.
Well, look, I want to just quote Andrew Carnegie. Ever heard of him? He said he likes to put all of his eggs in one basket and then watch that basket very carefully. And obviously, I did that with Bitcoin. It's an iconic move, people tell me. They're like, you're an icon because of the way you handled Bitcoin. just kidding. But I told Easy, I have more conviction and comfort with Pudgy Penguins than I do like AVAX. And that doesn't mean I'm not going to buy more AVAX. Nick, did you see a comment that you're like, I was supposed to be on the show today. This is a Kix. This is a speculator. I was supposed to be on the show today, but Clemente booted me for a Walmart version of Jim Cramer. I'm assuming he's talking about me because of my suit president. No, he's not. Who's he talking about?
I think he is. No, he's talking about Rob.
What? Oh, that's incredibly weird, Kix.
No, because I accidentally booked him for today. And then I was like, oh, we have Rom joining. So, you know, we don't want to have two superstars on at the same time. Got it. That's why Kix has been commenting all these things and just causing chaos.
Okay. So Kix is offended he was replaced with someone that manages like over $100 million of assets. Got it. Okay. Cool. Okay. Perfect. Well, anyway, look, I have like, if Pudgy corrects by like 50%, my stomach isn't going to turn. Whereas if I buy like a random GambleFi asset, my stomach is going to turn. So I'm like, all right, cool. And let's accumulate more little Pudgies while we're at it. That's my position. Who knows? Maybe I'm out to lunch.
Big Pudgies go to 10. Little Pudgies are going well over 1-2, 1-3 area, like without hesitation. The 1-to-10 ratio just feels off on that.
Okay, and Easy, let me ask you one question. Am I out to lunch that my friends that bought the top of NFTs last time, that have good jobs and make hundreds of thousands of dollars, blah, 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 and are interested in investing, but NFTs were dead during the bear market to them. In a year to 15 months, is it not probable one of them asked me about Pudgy Penguins?
I think less time than that, to be honest. I mean, dude, you got to think, Luca's just done a media tour. Like the last 2 weeks, he's posted every single news outlet in the greater Florida area that he was on. You know, like, he's going mainstream with it. That's his goal. They're in Walmart. They were in the Walmart Christmas catalog. Like, that, these gifts are 7 billion. There's more Giphy views on Pudgy than there is Star Wars. Like, that's a fact. Like, that's crazy.
That's a fact. That's a
like,
hard
that's
fact.
Absolutely nuts. Like, you see them in, like, Teams chats and people's family group chats sharing the penguin. Like, maybe they don't know what Pudgy Penguin is, but eventually they're going to be like, is that an NFT? The Instagram has 1 million followers. Like, it's gaining adoption at a much quicker scale than anything else, which is why when Nick said 10 feels realistic. Like, there will be resistance at 10, but I think bigs go to 10, littles go to 1-2, 1-3 without hesitation, which from a 0.5 entry, that's almost a clean 3x, 2.7x. It's a nice trade.
Ghost Skaters has them out to lunch. I totally could be. Totally could be. Ghost Skaters saying 10 Ethereum not on the table for Pudgy Penguins. We're going to have to see how it plays out. That's why the game is what it is, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to have to see how it goes. Anyway, next story. OK Bears announces a collaboration with Zara. So yesterday, OK Bears announced the clothing line in collaboration with the Zara, chain of retail stores that would be available in over 1,000 countries. Very interesting stuff. One quick comment on this, and then we're going to have our very special guest on. But Easy, any commentary on OK Bears being in Zara?
I think it's a big deal. Like, obviously, them working with WME is the big thing. And now I think they got the entry into the door there. But they also said Zara literally perused Magic Eden to find the two bears that they wanted. They just went through and looked and then picked two that they liked to put on the merch. And then they licensed them from the holders. The whole comment did as well that he's getting 50% of the revenue from it, which is great. Which
so that's literally huge. Just a picture of a bear.
On the shirt. So there's going to be more merch that supposedly the adult merch is more subtle. The one that they dropped yesterday is only for kids. So this is just kids clothing in Zara right now.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, they did get some pushback. People were like, why are they marketing to kids? Da, da, da. And the first comment I saw from an OK Bears holder is, don't tell them that Pudgy's toys are not for adults. And I was like, that's kind of funny. Like that was a pretty good clap back. So, I mean, yeah, I think they did a pretty good job. I don't know how many people will wear it, obviously. Like, it's just a giant bear on the shirt. But I think it's a bigger deal that it's in 1,700 stores in 74 countries. And people are already posting them in Paris and some European countries, showing that they were already in store. Anything that's like breaking into the mainstream audience is a big deal, in my opinion. And I think largely it's showing that these brands, which are NFT projects, partnering with people like WME and these other organizations, are getting entries into traditional space.
They're getting distribution. The real question is what the sell-through rate is for a lot of these different products. And that's something which I think is way more difficult. And without sort of a narrative behind them, when I'm going to a retail store making a purchase, I don't know how many people are in discovery mode versus, and I'm not the expert on this, which is why I'm literally saying, like, I have no idea how many are in discovery mode and willing to just pick up a shirt of a bear versus how many are there because they see the picture of the bear, they know, and they went there with that intention, which is how Pudgy got that initial sell through. I don't know if you saw this. So the Walmart homepage, for example, had Pudgy as the first toy on Black Friday. And then now it got like demoted is what I feel like. And I don't know if that's an indicator of literally anything. But ultimately, my guess is Walmart is looking to put the highest sell-through stuff on the homepage. So when someone gets there, they click and they end up buying or adding it to their cart. That's what they're aiming for when it comes to conversion and surfacing the best stuff that you have. And the products with the highest odds of that chance. So I don't know if that's indicative of anything or anything to read through, but my guess is what Pudgy has done is a phenomenal marketing campaign to get them into some of these stores. But even if I think in the mindset of the average retail consumer who's going to, for example, he's trying to get into Hot Topic right now, that person knows who Metallica is. They don't know who Pudgy Penguins is. So they may go buy that Metallica band shirt. That's the one thing. I'm not trying to throw cold water on this situation because I actually think it's incredible that they were able to facilitate those partnerships, and congratulations to OK Bears. I now feel that like the next level of that is saying, what are the brands that actually result in that retail sell through? And I don't know what's going to be the motivating factor of that. And in my opinion, that usually is driven by coolness, and coolness can come from a variety of things. But I don't know we haven't yet seen that next level, that sort of level of breakout. Pudgy instead, I think, has been the best demonstration of retail strategy. But again, sell-through is the most important thing when it comes to that. And I just don't know that we're yet to that point when it comes to any of these brands. So we'll wait and see. This is a major milestone, though, in that process.
Yeah, I mean, look, the way I like the way Nick thinks about this, he really kind of thinks about it at a deep level. And I think a lot of people could take notes on the way that he thinks about it. And I don't like giving Nick credit, quite frankly, for anything. So there you go. Signal has her hand raised. Signal, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how big Zara is in the US compared to Europe, because Zara is originally a Spanish store. But this is like an incredible partnership. I actually couldn't believe it, because Zara is huge in Europe, and
it's big here too. Signal, it's big.
Okay, cool, good. What's funny is that every time we heard, I think it was last year, that somebody partnered with WME or IMG, it always felt like the purgatory of brand partnerships. Like, they go in, but they never make it to the other side. You never hear from them again. Like, you know, so and so has been registered with WME agency, then silence. Never hear anything again. And this is the first time that at least I've seen that a collection has gone in, and then out of it, like a partnership as big as Zara has come in.
Well, and this year we've seen a ton of it, is the thing. Like, that's the thing, is you've seen Cool Cats at Macy's. We've now seen End Clothing with Creeps, and now Zara with OK Bears.
Well, we'll continue this conversation, gang, because I think it's going to be an ongoing thing. More people that have these WME relationships are going to be executing deals like this. We can dive into this deeper next week. We have a very special guest. So we have the CEO of Lumita Wealth Management. We have the ex-founder and CEO of Peer IQ, who had an exit in 2021. He's an ex-Wall Street investor. He joined us on the Bitcoin show a few months back, and we're very, very excited to have him. Nick, something to add to the intro here?
Well, we had dinner in New York a few weeks back, and I had no idea who Rom was before we actually met up, if I'm being completely transparent. And I'm like, wow, this guy is really smart, when we were having this conversation. But what he dropped during our dinner, the knowledge about tax strategy that we were discussing, I was just like, damn, like, this guy knows what he's talking about. And also he thinks very methodically. I then followed and now see all of his updates as he's posting what I would call mini analyst reports, essentially, with a lot of the tweets that you've been posting. And also some of your updates, the live streams from the conferences and things like that. I love the way that you're thinking about things, and it's great to have your perspective. So I'm excited to have you on the show.
Very kind of you. I love this conversation. The last dinner was fantastic. By the way, I feel like I had an espresso shot, Pio, with that introduction. Like, I wish my wife was here to hear that. I have to play that back for her later this afternoon.
Well, I'm not trying to pump you. It's always a pleasure. Well, absolutely. Likewise. And, you know, not trying to pump your tires, but out of everybody I follow on Twitter, you're definitely one of, if not the number one person where I'm like, why doesn't this guy have 100,000 followers? So I think that is like an inevitability in the future. You post some real analysis on Twitter.
Thank you. You know what it is? It's really funny. I think the smart money on Twitter doesn't like to like or retweet. Yeah. I've noticed this phenomena. But then, you know, the smaller accounts, they do. And, you know, maybe that's something to do with it. But I try to create good content, try to create perspective, try to show how we're processing the world and make sense of things. I think what helps is having a cross asset class perspective. All these markets are interconnected as one big global capital market. And so if you have that broader perspective, then you can identify what leads and what lags and what creates opportunities.
Well, speaking of that and speaking of smart money, so, you know, halfway through this year, when we had you on the Bitcoin show at that time, there was speculation of the ETF. It didn't feel as definite as it does now. And at that time, people were like, the price predictions that you would hear from people is 40K by the halving next year, but in the most bullish scenario, 40K by the end of the year. And then look at this, we're flirting with 40K right at the beginning of December. How are you looking at the crypto markets in the grand scheme of things? And what's your perspective on macro right now? Going into an election year, got some brand new wars people are selling, you know, all this different stuff going on.
It's a great set of questions. Like, look, this 2023 was the year of non-consensus. You have SBF going to jail. You have Genesis shutting down at the tail end of last year. That means go long digital assets, right? You have a 10-year going to 5%. That means go long risk assets in equity markets. You had the Israel-Hamas war. The point here is that markets discount and price bad news efficiently. And a lot of people are offsides or wrong way positioned during this rally. And they're also performance chasing. So I think next year we'll be bullish. The 10-year is at around 4.3%. That's constructive for all risk assets. Crypto also. So I look at that. We've had an incredible rally in terms of the grayscale discounts. That's where I've position and focus, particularly around ETHE. What's remarkable about that, you know, to your point, is that all of this was known. BlackRock said they're going to have an Ethereum ETF, and then they took a filing, and then this lifted. And so, you know, you could have pre-positioned around that. That said, we just had an incredible last November, right? The S&P was up, I want to say, like 7 to 8%.
Yep,
which is not too far off from what analysts' expectations were for the entire year. Way for the S&P. It is a bullish period of seasonality for risk assets. I do think that in very local terms, maybe like a week, perhaps 2 weeks, we are a bit overbought. So I'm not committing to new risk capital right now. The time to do that was like mid to late October, or in crypto in September. The last time we spoke, actually,
yep,
was the time to be committing, you know, risk assets. So, you know, if I look at some indicators, I can share a screen and walk you through a couple charts if you all would
like. Let's do it. Absolutely.
All right, great. Yeah. Let me share here.
And ladies and gentlemen that are just listening, we'll walk you through some of the charts that Ram is sharing as he shares them to kind of give you a little bit of an experience. Ram, of course, the CEO of Lumida Wealth Management. Yeah, I mean, we were accumulating Solana, definitely Bitcoin in September of this year. It's been interesting to see the lag on Ethereum. I like how you pointed out that BlackRock literally told everybody they were going to file for an Ethereum ETF and the market still acted surprised when they did it. Gotta love how it plays out. So we have a chart right here, the Bitcoin trend indicator.
That's right. So high level look, number one point, the trend is up. Just take a step back. The trend is up. That's important to just recognize that as a fact. We're not in a bear market. We're in a bull market. The fact that people are asking the question of when are we in a bull market is indicia that we're in a bull market. However, I think this is buy the dip mode now. This is buy the dip mode. That's the appropriate strategy for where we are. What that means is like looking for liquidations. This is a chart showing the trend. It's produced by CoinDesk. They've got a nice trend following strategy there. Look at Bitcoin open interest. It's elevated. It's not at the peaks that we saw near the top around November 21, but this is an indication of enthusiasm, animal spirits, and sentiment. And it's elevated. It's still, it's not at peak levels. When it's at peak levels, you want to be very cautious. Yeah. But we are thawing out of this freeze. And so I think that's elevated now as well. On Bitcoin futures, I like to look at the futures market and to see whether it's contango or backwardation. This looks like it's testing its lower support area right now as well. Coinbase is a great indicator as well. Right. So I think Coinbase, if you look at their stock, it is overextended above its moving averages. And the peaks in Coinbase have coincided with peaks in digital assets as well.
Yep.
So again, this is short-term tactical allocation. This is not about the long-term. Long-term, the trend is up. You want to be net long, but you want to be thoughtful when you deploy risk capital. So GBTC, again, very overextended.
So you have GBTC, but you're also covering the scam that is the organization behind this. Explain to me, do you own any GBTC?
Oh, yeah. I own ETHG. It's my favorite. We owned GBTC earlier in the year. Of course. This has been our focus this year. This was our thesis. We wrote about on Twitter. We said, how are we expressing our view in digital assets? It was GBTC and ETHE. And the reason why is because of the discount to NAV. And so here's back to your earlier point, Pio, around why Ethereum was lagging Bitcoin. Here's why. Here's the thesis. ETHE had a 40-50% discount to NAV. So the marginal dollar flowing in flowed into that product rather than spot. That's exactly what we did. Why am I going to buy spot when I can buy functionally the same product at a massive discount to NAV? Yes, I'm paying a management fee, but I've got this margin of safety and I've got this idea of pulling to par on the thesis that at some point there'll be an ETF. And sure enough, it's coming. So I think that's why Ethereum lagged Bitcoin.
Ladies and gentlemen, just to give a little context, ETHE, that's the Grayscale Ethereum Trust. Grayscale, of course, owned by Digital Currency Group. CEO Barry Silbert got caught up in the FTX debacle, got caught up with the Winklevoss twins Gemini Earn product. Rahm is quite literally the number one authority, in my opinion, or at least that's publishing it publicly on that topic in the world, literally. I mean, no one has put more detailed analysis on Twitter.
I appreciate that. It's like got caught up in also being a fraudster. Yeah, but
I presented it like a drug deal gone bad, but it's like big time finance stuff.
Funny. Well, I think part of what people did is they said, hey, look, maybe there's fraud in these trusts. Maybe the Bitcoin isn't there. And maybe that's the reason why these discounts are so wide. But the reason I focused on the DCG issue was to understand the integrity of the trust. And the conclusion we had is that, these trusts are secure. They're intact. They're not going to spill Bitcoin on the open market. And we said, okay, go along that. So it's quite interesting because when we looked at DCG, I wrote a thread several months ago saying this is a modern Enron. And then NYAG came out and is alleging fraud. But their subsidiary, Grayscale, yeah, I'm long those products. You have to separate your analysis of the parent from how you express. In the same way, look, I think what Elon Musk is doing for free speech is tremendous, but I'm not a big fan of Tesla stock. They're different ideas.
Real quick, and I just want to confirm what you were saying here about the discount. Your argument was, or a thesis here, is that ETHE and Bitcoin, what's the ticker for the Bitcoin trust?
GBTC.
GBTC. That GBTC was trading at a more significant discount, and that resulted in actual literal spot market trends.
I would say the first money to enter the market flew in through these products, because they offered access to the same risk except through an expression that a discount to NAV. So remember over the summer, Ethereum was flattish, wasn't really going anywhere.
Yep.
ETHE was rallying through that. It was rallying July and August as well. We didn't even notice that because you can see it right here, right? This is the ETHE for those that are on the stream. You can see the ETHE. This is the discount to NAV. Notice it's tightening.
Yeah, went from 60% to upwards of 30% by September, something like that. So
exactly, right. So even though the spot market was flat, if you owned the Grayscale ETHE product, you were seeing price improvement there from the fact that the discount to NAV was tightening.
And what was the actual price accumulation during this time? And are you planning on exiting before a transition, or do you want 100% discount? Or sorry, 0% discount.
I have to check the price gains once a week. I know like 3 weeks ago it was 240%. 240%. Since it's bananas. It's like, you know, normally we would rebalance, but we don't want to get short-term capital gains. So we're going to hold it to get to the 12-month period. And like I said, 16% discount to NAV. When the ETF converts, that discount should go away. So there's still an opportunity there, but it's, you know, certainly not as compelling as it was a few months ago. I still think it's a smarter way to have exposure to Ethereum.
And I have a question here for you. It's kind of the opposite side of it. So when you see crypto rallying, and I'm more of a short-term trader, so I recognize short-term capital gains basically daily. You know, that's just how the brain works here. Do you look at the DXY at all when it comes to like price action across the market? Because that's the one chart I look at constantly.
It's a great point. Yeah, DXY is part of my three-prong market compass. So I look at three things. One is the direction of the US dollar. In a risk-on market, I want to see that declining. Notice that in August, September, October, the US dollar was strengthening. So we went underweight risk the first week of August. Talked about that on Twitter. And then we were just twiddling thumbs for weeks. Okay, US dollar is still strengthening. We're going to put our hands down. The second prong to that was semiconductors, SMH. Why semiconductors? That's a proxy for the AI narrative. The AI narrative has added animal spirits to the market. And the third is the 10-year. So when the 10-year is rising, that creates a higher discount rate on stocks. And these are all risk assets. They're all related. So when the 10-year started going from 4 points to 5 points, and this is while the dollar was strengthening, we said, all right, that's risk off. And then towards mid-October, you started to have a capitulation in the bond market. People were scared that it might go to 6-7%. And then the dollar started weakening and semiconductors started to rally, like Broadcom and ASML. And that's when we said, okay, it's time to start accumulating risk assets again. But I agree, those are good aspects to look at. The other part I would look at is I'm starting to include Coinbase's stock price more into my analysis of the crypto market. And of course, Bitcoin open interest.
I was going to say it's the easiest way for retail to get exposure to crypto without actually having to look into it. It's like just buying Coinbase.
And institutions also have the ability to buy right now, whereas they can't with the ETF. So I think Coinbase is a really interesting one, is a significant one, especially for those that are speculating on future price action of crypto. And if we think that, if there's a bull market that's coming, a lot of this appears to be front running it. The thing that I wonder with some of this is like, are we just seeing more violent swings? Because it becomes this like anticipatory, like all of us are piling in, and like it becomes this like premature bull rally, but it sort of just creates itself as a result of it. And like, or do you end up seeing it? Like, is there some scenario where we pull back again? Because you said buy the dips, but like the fear that I have when you look at like the weekly on Bitcoin or something like that through the last rally, there basically wasn't a dip. Like for from bottom to top, it was just straight up basically. And so
a dip is like $800 on the Bitcoin price,
right? Yeah, I think if you look at Bitcoin, there are a couple months that made substantial moves. Like one was January, then there was the kind of the early summer, and then now it's been on a tear as well. So I think part of it is you have to be pre-positioned so that these assets get lifted up, and you don't want to be in a position to chase. That's my approach. That's my style. I'd rather be providing liquidity when the trend is up as opposed to being forced to chase. So no, you're right. I think you know, it's risk on. This most bullish seasonal period, you know, of the year. The 10-year went from 5% to 4.3% in about 4 weeks. That's a violent swing in the bond market. So if you look across the world, central banks on aggregate are easing, not tightening. And it looks like we had the last rate hike. So there's a lot of, you know, bullish considerations out there, and there's a lot of liquidity in the market. There's so much money in the market. We saw this the week before U.S. risk assets rallied. China came close to retesting and then zipped up. It didn't quite touch the bottom. The point there, though, is that there's a lot of people with capital on the sidelines trying to get these entries, and then they trip over themselves trying to get in the market, to your point. The first week of November, the S&P rallied 6%. Because the bulk of the move took place the first week of November. What's that mean? It means that there's a lot of capital out there, and that creates chasing and crowdedness and these fast moves. So you want to pre-position ahead of that. That's the approach I would take. I think there are interesting moves in Bitcoin for sure. I think Bitcoin dominance will continue. At the same time, I do think there's some moves in the altcoin market, like these orphaned coins out there that people have ignored, where there's a real product, a real team, good actors, and traction that you can evidence on, say, Dune Analytics. I think there's some moves to make there. Deploying to altcoins and just wait. Wait 3 months, wait 6 months, wait 9 months. Be patient. Liquidity will flow in. Those assets will also lift up.
Let's talk about that, Ram, because and Nick, I'm sure, has a great question right now, but I want to talk about Solana and Avalanche, if you like those. But hold on, Nick, what's going on?
I just want to contextualize it also, because this is something that I think you provide a unique perspective on, especially for our audience of degens, which is not 100%, but the percentage of the audience, which is like trading in, just aping in to primarily altcoins, where their portfolio exposure may be 80% altcoins, which
95%
is ludicrous, which is obviously an unreasonable position. But I am interested how you actually think about that as well. So I want to both hear, Pio's question, but I want to contextualize it with as well about where you think. And I'd be interested, even like personally, I know how I've been thinking about sort of altcoin exposure versus Bitcoin exposure and where that fits in my portfolio. But I'm interested how you actually think about that. So A, which of these coins like Solana and stuff like that are you interested in? But B, how do you think about portfolio construction when it comes to exposure to those areas?
Sure. I'll focus on the themes rather than specific names. Maybe we do that in a few months, if only because I don't want to get front run. I can't tell you.
He's a professional, ladies and gentlemen. He's a professional.
By the way, real investors don't shill. Because they want to accumulate assets at low prices.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
I very rarely am saying, like, backing up the truck on this thing. I'll lay out a thesis, a reasoning. I might make a comment.
I should probably learn a thing or two about that.
I share, like, my reasoning so people see my thought process. But I rarely, you know, then months will go by and I'll bring it up again. It's not, you know, so just consider that when you're processing things online. But I'll talk about a few high-level themes. And the reason why, you know, I had an interview with Kyle Samani from Multicoin a few months ago, and I asked him about Render. It's an AI token. And then 3 months, up 300%. So
pretty good.
It's on Solana. So one of the themes I like is, yeah, decentralized compute, decentralized storage, decentralized AI. There's only at least 8 to 10 different coins in there. You got to figure out where to focus within that bucket. I like that because there's real traction and it ties to a good narrative. There's real value. Some of those protocols are actually generating revenue. They got facilities, they got teams, they got infrastructure, they got servers. It's not just a product roadmap on a website. So that's one. There's, you know, this DPIN narrative, decentralized physical infrastructure, of which Helium token, I'm sure your audience is probably aware of, was one example. There are variations of that coming online. One's trying to decentralize Uber. I'm not betting on the decentralized Uber, although I'm sure it'll pump anyway. That's just the nature of what I expect 2024 to look like, right? I think there will be a familiarity bias too. A lot of people washed out in 2022. They said, all right, I'm out. This whole thing is a circus. They probably sold at the lows. And they're probably texting you like they're texting me and saying, what do you think about this? What should I buy?
Right? Already? Like, what?
I'm seeing that here and there. I'm seeing like more forward-thinking people say that, not mainstream. Mainstream probably thinks Bitcoin is down in the gutter somewhere. That's probably what mainstream thinks, right? So, but I'm seeing early adopters starting to ask that. It's like, why don't we have this conversation a year ago, 6 months, even 6 months ago, even 3 months ago? You know, you could have substantial gains and opportunities. So, but I think there's going to be a familiarity effect. When people get back in the market, they're going to look at kind of their old flames, right? That you look up your ex online, right? That's what's going to happen here. They're going to say, oh, I know this token. Let me start there and get positioned and then reassess, you know, beyond that. I think some of that will happen.
Well, I mean, that's why I buy some Dogecoin. I got like $6,000 of Dogecoin because I just know that they're going to come back for it at some point. And that's one that I know I'll part with personally. It's very easy for me to do that. Ram, I guess like, you know, how hard is it for you through Lumita to get exposure to like an altcoin? Like, is there red tape you have to walk around with that?
Well, and also the portfolio construction thing is still on the table here.
I was trying to dodge that last one. Nick there. But yeah, no, so it's challenging. You know, as an SEC registered investment advisor, we have to comply with the custody rule. And the custody rule is a good purpose. The idea is that you don't want your RIA or broker to custody your assets in case they blow up. And it's also protection against fraud risk. So all of our assets on equities and fixed income are custodied at Schwab.
Yeah.
We want it that way. We like it that way.
Yeah.
So crypto is a bit different. Now, you know, there's questions around whether certain exchanges are qualified custodians, whether legally we can work with them or not. Uncertainty, right? But there's a new technology that we intend to work with. We're waiting for their SOC 2 to complete. It's like a risk security InfoSec compliance test called L1. I'm an angel investor in them, so is VanEck. But they allow the end client to maintain their private keys in custody. So when we recommend a transaction, then say, you know, Nick, on your phone, you'd get a prompt and you'd approve the trade. And it's in your wallet. It's in your control. You custodied it. Now we're not responsible for your security of that. It creates different kinds of questions and all that. But that is a technology that we're going to adopt, which will allow us to get exposure to any asset, virtually any asset. We can do liquidity provision on Uniswap, which is a very attractive opportunity as well, right?
It's L1, Ram said. So Ram, if I'm understanding correctly, that's institution grade compliant access to the degen crypto space. Obviously, that's an informal way.
So you can buy the people's Bitcoin is what you're telling me.
Yes, you can buy any altcoin you want. L1 advisors, yeah, VanEck and I are investors in the business. Founders very capable. And I'm just Googling right now real quick.
Yeah, L1 advisors. Yeah, it feels very similar to kind of the narrative, which I think is actually going to be the case for this entire for this next cycle that we're entering, although it's starting a little bit after the beginning of the cycle. But what's the backpack and
backpack?
Is that the exchange that we're talking
about? It's X. Yeah, I think they're calling it the X exchange.
So the Mad Labs team, they're building, and they were in the Wall Street Journal the other day. I'm totally blanking on what the name of this exchange is, but custodial exchanges is
you custody your own assets with this exchange.
Non-custodial exchanges.
Yes. I keep getting that backwards, but the bottom line is it's in my wallet is the main thing. So yeah, having that functionality, that's huge. So okay,
it's huge. Think about the competitive advantage that you have from being able to access that market. When I see a token listed on Coinbase, I'm not that interested anymore.
Right, you're late.
You're late. When a token's on Coinbase, it's like the equivalent of the IPO.
Yep.
You want to sell into the IPO. That's what venture capitalists do. They had a 6-month lockup though.
Yeah.
But in Coinbase, when the token's listed, there's no lockup. Depends obviously on the token, the protocol. And, you know, the crypto market is very different because you have a number of different exchanges from gate.io on the one hand to Coinbase on the other. And these tokens, as they get listed, they get more and more liquidity along the way. And so we look at that, like, where is this token in its journey and its roadmap? And you, to your point, you don't want to be the last one to buy the token. You want to see, does it have a pathway that's credible to being listed on these exchanges? And that's a function of, you know, the team and the backers and its, you know, other considerations. But yeah, no, I think it's very powerful. And there's a handful of advisors in the world doing it today. So we're one of the first. I'm very excited about that. By the way, one of our investors is former SEC Chairman Arthur Levitt.
Good person really, to have in your corner.
Well, we have to do everything the right way, and we would do that regardless. But the point there is not all SEC chairmen have the approach that Chair Gensler has to the crypto asset class. You know, Arthur said that it's inevitable that we'll see crypto in the financial markets, and that's happening now with the ETFs and BlackRock.
Rom, I just wanted to point out here, as you're seeing from the comments that are being pinned, I'm both excited and disappointed that we brought you on. One, I want to have you on here. Two, as Kix is saying, we want this to stay a secret because the insight that you provide every time I speak with you and also when I see your tweets, I'm just like, yo, this stuff is so good because you actually think deeply about the concept versus like the average crypto Twitter, as someone pointed out, which is literally just blindly aping into like some random hilarious coin.
There are very sharp crypto Twitter investors. We all know who they are. They are, you know, crypto traders are incredibly thoughtful and skillful. It's easy to dismiss them.
You're giving us a lot of credit, man.
No, they really are. I have my own Telegram group with my own kind of handpicked friends in there. Across the sector.
That's a juicy Telegram, Rom.
It's a nice Telegram group. It's a really good Telegram group, actually. But, you know, we try to challenge each other there, too. It's like, hey, here's my idea. What do you think? Poke the holes in it. And it's not about rallying people around an idea like an alpha group. It's not about that at all. It's around, here's my hypothesis. But it's not open to the public, though, because people aren't safe having conversations on Twitter, right? You get people that will, it's hard to have a conversation.
It's a public square. Anybody can come at you. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's a public square.
Exactly. We had a very sophisticated individual who made your point, Pio. He's like, oh, like, why not Doge? Very sophisticated individual. And, you know, he wouldn't say that on Twitter. Right? I mean, this is a guy that, you know, you would all recognize and very credentialed, very, you know, very prominent individual, and he's not going to say that on Twitter. I'm glad he said that because now we can have a conversation around that.
Well, it's I like the approach that you're taking. It's more of one which is reminiscent. I don't want to hold it to the standard of a PhD thesis or something like that, but it's at least a vetted idea which is being presented, which is way more methodical again than just blindly aping into some random thing, which I do occasionally do despite my instinct or my desire to be more methodical. My instinct often drives me into FOMO, but you get better and better over time with managing that sort of psychological side of things.
Absolutely. What I really like is an AI that can scan Twitter and the Telegram groups and Reddit, and then build a sentiment signal and idea generation, right? And there's a lot to do around that. You got to partition because most accounts, I think, negative value added. I want to counter trade them. And that has value also.
Yeah.
Right? So I want to know.
There's top signals everywhere. When you see some, like everyone's got those three or four pages when they post. You do the complete opposite, and it prints. It's like there's really no in between. Right.
Exactly.
There's a potential thing there, I think, with Grok as Elon's working on with Twitter, and I think that Grok, one of the areas that they said they were focusing on specifically was the mathematical side of things, where they're in scientific measurement, which makes me think, yeah, sentiment analysis as well as like overall trends and being able to get that aggregate data directly from within Grok is so valuable, and making that available to pro consumers, basically, I think it may end up actually being quite a clever approach. In which case, maybe the subscription model is now $20 a month for me to also include Grok or something like that. I
fully agree. I agree. And that happens in equity markets today with Twitter. There are companies like Ravenpack. I had a dinner with a friend there this Wednesday. They sell that data to Two Sigma and Millennium and others. And what they do is they process the news, they process Twitter, they generate a sentiment feed. And, you know, we need something like that for crypto, because as you know, it just takes a lot of time and a lot of energy to find those unique ideas and opportunities. And so, but there's a lot to do. Yeah.
Well, that's probably why you're a daily listener of this podcast, Rom, trying to figure out just one of those, you know, signals. And so, no. And also,
well, I love that, you know, you all have a broader perspective and approach too. Like, we've talked about Tesla and growth stocks and NFTs. I think NFTs as a market have bottomed. Don't ask me where to focus in NFTs. That's not my specialty. You know, if there's a lesson from Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett, it's know your circle of competency. And I have no idea where I believe NFTs have bottomed. And I have friends that are more expert in that than I am, but it's just such a hard category to identify what subsector. But although high level, I think many of those categories are gonna rally.
We can't afford you, Rom, but how much would it take to get you back on the show in a shorter period of time?
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure.
Was there another question?
I have another question for Rom, if we can keep you for another couple minutes. Is Rom, this L1 product that you just brought up that you're an investor in, I think you've said VanEck is an investor in too.
Yes.
I am fascinated by that because I didn't even know that that was an option before, like say last bull run, late 2020, institutional investors could buy GBTC. Was Grayscale ETH Trust even a thing at that time? Did that exist at that time in late 2020? It might have not.
Yeah.
Oh, it did?
Let's take a look. I've got the discount to NAV chart here. It'll take a moment to pull that up, actually. One second.
Can anyone just sign up for this L1 Advisors right now and just create a portfolio in there?
I think it's designed for RIAs and wealth managers. But, you know, you have the website, load up here on the page. Check it out. You know, reach out, learn more. We expect to be an early adopter very soon. I'm very much looking forward to this. You know, 2023 is very simple. You just needed 1 to 2 bets and you're good. That's it.
Solana.
I think, look, just being long, Solana, Bitcoin, Ethereum, ideally with a better expression, you'd have been fine, right? Like, don't beat yourself up for not getting the perfect expression, right? But 2024 is going to require more diversity, is my hypothesis. Mm-hmm. And more tactics too. You know, there's going to be still more volatility ahead. So I think it's going to be an interesting year to navigate.
H1 2024, is that a buy the dip half?
I'm not good at like making big crystal ball forecasts. What I like to do is see what the market delivers. Kind of use like a poker analogy. Like, what hand am I being dealt today? Try to assess how people are positioned. How big is the pot? What's the probability that I can do well? So when I look at the ETHE discount at 30, 40, 45% discount to NAV, and my headline view is that the bottom's in because people were shaken out November 16th of last year with Grayscale, DCG Genesis News, FTX, then I'm like, all right, the odds are in my favor. It's like when you're playing blackjack, you know, those high cards in the deck. So same thing with the financial crisis. Like during the March, April, we waited for a volume climax spike and then we bought JP Morgan. I couldn't have told you there would have been a banking crisis in March or April. But when the market creates an event for you, it's easier to wait and assess. Here's an example. This Monday, Zscaler, cybersecurity company, announced earnings. Now, we like the cybersecurity theme because cybersecurity hacks are going up from China, intellectual property theft, et cetera, ransomware, and AI as well. So they posted good numbers, but the stock tanked 8%. We bought it in the after hours, 4:30, 5:30 p.m. on Monday, and it closed the next day, and it back to all-time highs. And that happened for Google, happened for Palo Alto Networks, same phenomena. Google announced earnings, 4 p.m., aftermarket drops 8%. Palo Alto Network. So when the market gives you these names on sale, you take advantage of that. Now, You must have done the work in advance to get after that, though. What I'm not doing is saying, oh, okay, it's a cheap thing. If something happened, it fell out of bed. No, because that could be a value trap. We have gear names we like, and we track them each day. And if they go on sale because of an event like earnings, we want to take advantage of that because we want that Black Friday, Cyber Monday discount as opposed to paying retail prices, which is where markets are getting closer to today. Still want to be net long, I think, still bullish Q4, but you know, the time to be buying was a month ago.
I'm just saying, you said no crystal balls. I'd been saying for a year, Q3 2023 was going to be the bottom dip that we get to end the bear
this.
For the better part of a year. I'm just saying, I've said 1 year pre-election cycle. Everything just kind of lined up. ETF.
I like your cycle analysis too. The election cycle, we look at that as well. You know, we're constructed.
Rob,
you know,
we'd be good friends. If you want to slide the Telegram invite, I wouldn't say no.
We have a, you know what? We'll go to that Chinese restaurant in Midtown again and hang out. That was a lot of fun.
We definitely need to do it again. The thing I was going to say is, and I want to bring you back on, primarily, there was something that you shared while we were there. You were mentioning the 6 or 7 tax-advantaged strategies that you can use. Now, obviously, many of those were categorized for those with higher net worth because most people can't even fully take advantage of it. Some of it was trust strategies. Some of it was there were all sorts of other components of it. But what I loved about it was it's all above board. Like, this is all just like legitimate strategies that people can use. I'd love to share to like recap that information once again, because it was I just remember being like, this is so valuable, the information that you were providing.
Yeah.
And I just appreciate your investment theses as well. And I think it shows the stuff that you're talking about with the Telegram group, et cetera. It's the distinction between what I would say is your type of a professional investor, an investment advisor, versus what I would call is a semi pro or some people get nice headphones because they're really into the quality of audio. That's where I would fall when I think it comes to trading NFTs, crypto, and things like that. But you have a lot more insight, because you also have a lot more skin in the game and stakes for the assets under management.
There's a lot of value when you can link investing with trust, tax, and estate planning. You know, we have crypto natives that were ETH ICO investors that have extraordinary wealth. And we have to design trust plans that include onshore and offshore. They're hedging against US risk, US sovereign risk.
Why?
My trust and estate plan costs $13,000 at a nice attorney from Denton's in New Jersey. It's great. Those trust plans cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, by the way, for that 99.9 and 8 more nines after that.
Yeah.
That's what they're selling for. But on tax, it's a great point. Look, there's a reason why people own a lot of real estate. There's a reason why people have life insurance, even if they don't have kids, because there are tax advantages. I'm happy to talk about that at some point. And I don't talk about that enough because I'm always focused on markets and investing. That's the primary thing. But if tax is very important, you know, long-term capital gains matter, or deferrals, or, you know, Peter Thiel created a lot of wealth out of his Roth IRA, making investments out of his Roth IRA. So all this growth is his account. And so a lot of clever things in there. I'll give you one quick example. So if you buy real estate, and real estate's a great portfolio diversifier for anyone that owns crypto, because real estate throws off cash flow. So you can sustain your lifestyle and you've got the cash flow to invest whenever there's a bear market. It helps you with your psychology. It's very important. Psychology is so crucial to investing. If you believe that your entire net worth is going to rise and fall by 50 points in a month, you're not going to be able to make good decisions. You're not going to have like the presence of mind, integrity of decision-making. So if you have real estate, you get to depreciate the entire value of your purchase. Now, if you or I buy a home, we can't do that. If we buy an investment, it could be a home I rent out to others, I get to depreciate that. Now, it's better. I can go to a bank, I can get a loan, I finance that, and I can pull out my equity. So one of the things we're doing is we're buying distressed commercial real estate through a private equity company. and they're buying assets for 45 cents in the dollar. They'll go back to 75 and 80 and 90 cents in the dollar the next few years. They're going to go to a bank and get a loan for a 50% loan to value and refinance, pull out all their equity. But when they take that cash distribution, it's not taxed. It's not taxed.
Incredible.
And when you get the coupon on the real estate, that will not be taxed either because the depreciation throws off passive losses to offset the passive income. That's why so much wealth has been created in real estate. But, you know, the time to buy real estate is once every decade when rates are high, like they are now. And, you know, you want to buy in a dislocation. That's one quick example. But to your point, you know, there's six or seven different things that are going on.
You're saying it's time to buy real estate right now.
Well, because Nick, think about
it. I completely understand it. I just wanted to reemphasize that point. You're saying I didn't mean to interrupt, but you were just saying like when demand is lower, that's the best time to.
You have to be thoughtful about your expression and your exposure. Like if you want to get after this category, I recommend going after a professional private equity real estate firm that knows what they're doing. They have to have on the ground resources and talents, general contractors, access to labor, access to the permitting system. Here's a quick example for you. So there is the IKEA, in the island. That's for sale by a large bank. That bank is called UBS. UBS just bought CS. They've got their own issues. They bought that for $90 million. They invested $40 million in improvements. That's called CapEx. They improved it. Now they get a change in course. They try to build multifamily. Those are called like apartment buildings. They got denied. I don't know why they got denied. Probably didn't want job losses. Who knows what? So now they're selling this thing. And the firm that we're invested in is bidding on this. They're bidding 45 cents on the dollar, number one. Before they even close the transaction, they're calling Costco. They're saying, Costco, we got a parking lot here. Why don't you take that parking lot and develop it? They're not doing any CapEx improvements. So they're already lining up the value creation on the other side. There's no need for permitting. So, and they're filling out any vacancies in the mall as well. So like, those are a good example. That's not something that the four of us could do. You need specialized expertise.
I was going to say, Rob, this sounds like an opportunity for us to get together and invest.
Between the Telegram group and pitching Rom to get in on a private equity real estate deal, I don't think we're going to – that's not what we brought him here today.
I know. We went into a new area, but, you know, we love investing. And it's when you can bring it all together, to your point, Nick, around portfolio construction, then the magic happens. Because when one asset's zagging, the other asset is going to go zig. Right?
Real quick, like think about this, Ram, and I know you're going to have to go in a moment, but think about it like this. Let's say I'm an individual. I don't have access to a private equity real estate deal. I'm a renter, right? But I have cash. Right. I've done well in crypto. I've got some cash, right? I could buy a property, and this is in my understanding is this is all legal. Obviously, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a real estate person, but I could buy a property and I could say that's my primary residence. I've never owned a property before. I'm renting. So that's my primary residence. Whether or not I live in that 6 to 9 months later, I can decide to start a real estate LLC because I want to rent out that property that I am the owner of.
You just said it's my primary residence, whether or not I live in it. Maybe you should have skipped that part of your statement and continue forward.
Okay. Anyway, so check it out. I want to rent it out now. I find a renter, whether or not it even covers the full overhead of the mortgage, the property tax, the this, that, and the other thing. I have this LLC business now, and that's a very between the real estate that I own through the LLC and the LLC itself. That's a very powerful situation to be in. You talked about writing down the depreciation on the real estate. You talk about having cash flow. You talk about a future refi, potentially a cash out refi. That gives a normal person that's not a super duper expert a lot of power, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a great opportunity. I'll give you one other tax tip, which is more crypto relevant. It's called tax optimization. And its cousin's called direct indexing. It's going to disrupt all these ETFs out there, right? So ETF, you're paying a fee to have exposure to something. But what direct indexing tax optimization does is, let's say you're long the S&P. What direct indexing will do is, let's say a stock drops like NVIDIA. It'll sell that security, book the loss, so you get a realized tax loss, and then go buy like Broadcom, which is correlated, or ASML, which is correlated. So you still net long the S&P, but now you're realizing all these tax losses so that you can offset any taxable gains. Anyway, does that make any sense?
I'm sorry. Our co-founder, who's not on the show today, is in the chat. He was mad about you coming on the show because Clemente accidentally booked him too and then told him you can't come because Rom's here. In our private Slack, he texted us and he said, I wish my mom would marry Rom so that he was my stepdad. And now he's in the chat roasting me. I'm sorry. I hate to get silly here, but anyway.
I got a lovely wife and three kids here in New Jersey. Congratulations
on a growing family. We definitely need to take you up on the Chinese restaurant again. And B, we'd love to have you back to discuss some of this, the tax strategy and other things. You're a wealth of knowledge as a wealth manager. And I think that the insight that you provide, it's rare to come across people who are able that also you geek out on it. Like you actually, it's so clear that you enjoy this, which is different than you go to like a Morgan Stanley investment advisor guy who's literally just a salesperson. That's all that they are. And they're given like a presentation. You're actually like really deep in the weeds. And you're so deep that you're thinking about the risk assets of crypto and some of these other things, which I think is absolutely brilliant. And I think also just shows how you're thinking about across the spectrum of investment opportunities. And I appreciate the insight that
you're very kind of you. No, thank you so much. Like legacy wealth managers broken and it's full of conflicts. They make back end fees, hidden fees. They push their own products and they don't perform. They don't actually create wealth. They're a drag on wealth. And what they give you is if you're at JP Morgan, you get the US Open ticket once a year, but you're paying for that in performance. And our peer group are hedge funds and private equity funds. I interviewed my friend Skyler, who runs a non-agency RMBS hedge fund. Most wealth advisors don't even know what I just said, right?
I don't know what you just said.
We're playing the game at a different, it's just, it's curating the people around you and being focused on it. And this is what I love to do, doing a long time. I don't watch Netflix. I focus on what I enjoy doing. That's what these books are about. And I think markets and investing are incredible teachers. We can learn from them. And, you've got to look out into the future and develop a thesis. And I enjoy that part of it as well. And you've got to be humble as well. That's why I believe in diversification. But I want to make money when I diversify. I don't want to own the S&P 500. I want to own semiconductors, energy, nuclear renaissance themes. Right? So, for instance...
I mean, Rob, you're an incredible guest. Forgive me for my uncontrollable laughter there at the end. Very unprofessional of me, but
not at all.
I want to hear I do want to hear the rest of this, but and I'm also trying to figure out how we're going to transition to ripping open the packs
of the Pokemon cards. But it's okay.
Pokemon cards that we bought, which is literally the ender of the show, which is hilarious.
That's a good high note. That's a good high note to end on. Pokemon, it's my kid's birthday today. I'll have to get him some Pokemon cards.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, we have the place for you to do it, Rom. There's an open drop right now at courtyard.io where you can buy.
If you want the digital one.
You can buy the digital or you can burn it to actually get the physical counterpart. Now, it is a little bit of a risk here because it's $200 and there's like chase cards. This is like what I would call a high-end Pokemon pack is what you're buying with all graded cards inside of it, essentially, that you can redeem.
Send me the URL. If I can do it quickly and easily, I'll knock it out.
There you go. Right. Well, Rom, this was such a pleasure, man. I know you're an incredibly busy guy, so I appreciate you giving us some time on a Friday. Have a great weekend, and can't wait till next time.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Take care now.
You too. Ladies and gentlemen, follow Rom. That's at Rom Ahluwalia. We have a pin.
They followed him because they were just like, damn, he's providing so much freaking alpha. Like this
and then
guy.
They all commented, nobody else follow him because I want to keep this for myself.
Yeah, no one share this show. That's actually the thing. When we were talking with Rom, Pio had put together a dinner. That's basically my favorite dinner that Pio has put together ever. But he said in advance that it would be and was correct about it. Rom is a freaking rock star. And if you're following him, then you're just getting smarter. We should, do we want to real quick rip some of these?
Let's rip these packs while we have Nick, or Clemente.
Well, we've been having people, ripping these and just tagging The Discord is just going crazy right now, ripping these. We've had some good pulls. Someone,
Let's go.
We had some people. I think it was Ray T pulled a like $500 card.
What?
General Pudge is onto his third pack. So he's just buying and ripping right now.
Let's go, General Pudge. Guys, I was crying from laughter when I brought up the tax thing, and then Kix is in the comments, and Kix in all caps is going, LOL, Rom, here's a tax fraud idea.
You basically said,
in theory, we live there, but we don't live there, and we're going to rent it out. So is that legit or what?
That was so funny. Rom's face is pretty funny.
You're sitting there asking a wealth manager who's great with taxes, what is the best way to commit fraud?
Oh, that was so funny, man.
And the LLC tossed in there. I don't even know what the combo there. You're like, so let's have an LLC that's actually used as a trading business. How do I use that business for real estate? Okay. And now I take that property and I jam it in that LLC, despite the fact that the IRS requires me to categorize. Anyways, I that was hilarious. I'm going to rip mine. Pio, are you going to open yours? Clemente, did you buy one?
I did not.
Okay.
Buy one now.
Should I?
Spend $200, Clemente, right now. You have to. It's part of your job. Even though you probably not.
Well, even though you're moving in 12 days, you might need the money.
Okay, so I'm about to go through the process with my own of ripping this pack.
Is that what we're watching? So, ladies and gentlemen, we got the courtyard.io pack opening right now. Nick. Oh, Aerodactyl. Hollow. Vintage 1999.
First edition hollow. Let's see what it's going for.
$2,350. Wait, no. Grade 9, 126.
Okay, not bad.
I lost a little money there.
I'm buying a pack right now. We're buying a pack.
All right, good shit. So I got to share my screen for this, yeah?
Yes.
Can I say something real quick? If you are ripping yours, whatever you reveal, if you tweet it and tag at Bodagos, we're going to be giving away an extra pack to someone that does it. People are I'm going to pull these up after we all rip, because people are actually pulling some super hot fire. We had the biggest win so far has been a $600 card. So
nice. Very nice. I'm manifesting a Charizard. Let's go. I got the Charizard coming out. Let me just get a separate window open. All right, here we go.
Easy. As he's in the process of doing that, quick question for you. In terms of your vibe on the Pokemon market right now, is this a hold because we think that prices and aggregate are
going to go up? Hold this. Hold every collectible right now. The watch market is currently still trending down. That's the lead indicator for collectibles. Expensive collectibles, when they start trending up, cheaper collectibles then tail. That's what I'm doing right now. You want to hold collectibles right now. In box, in slabs, like, don't sell them.
Okay. Let's watch Pio.
All right, here we go. I almost like don't want to do it because I'm like so excited about it. I want to like save it, but no, here we go. So how do I open it?
Open pack. The button right there.
Here we go. Rip and record. We're recording it, Courtyard. Don't worry about that. It's being recorded. It's being live streamed. Let's go. Let's go.
Someone said it's less than that, Nick. Shut your mouth. Okay? If a site tells me how much it's worth, then that's how much it's worth. And I Googled it perfectly.
Someone pulled the Charizard.
We're going to see. I just connected my wallet. Or I'm connecting it right now. Just a moment.
There's got to be more than one Charizard in here, right?
I just have to connect the right wallet. One second. Here we go. And easy. You're buying one. You use your credit card?
Yeah, I'm doing it right now.
Cool.
Just entering my card.
I just got one.
All right. I'm going to hard refresh real quick. Open pack. I think I just need to get the right.
Pio can't get his browser to work ever. And that's a.
Let's go. What do we got? 9.5, 2004 X Team Rocket Returns Tyranitar.
Keep that up. X Team Rocket Returns Dark Tyranitar. What the hell is a Tyranitar?
Something in the Pokemon ecosystem.
It's a Pokemon character.
$9.5, $52, Pio.
Okay. Tough one. I didn't get the Charizard. It's okay.
I did better. Mine's worth 125. How does it feel to have lost relative to me?
It feels rough. I'm not even going to lie. It does feel rough. We got Easy. Easy, you want to share your...
I want to go. So see, here we go. Logged in, open pack, record, open pack. You see how easy that is? Boom. Booyah. Did it like 2 minutes faster than PO.
That's right.
Here we go. Big money. What the hell is this?
Elisa's Sparkle. Well, I mean, that looks very interesting. PSA 10 Gem Mint 2022. Okay.
What is Elisa's Sparkle? Is that even Pokemon?
That's a wild special edition Pokemon card. Gotta think so. Looks like it's Japanese.
What's the grade?
10.
$96.
There we go. $100 card right there. Easy's about to pull a $500 card right here. Watch.
That's the hope. I gotta send some cash.
Pokemon. Yo, y'all whack. That's Clemente's favorite Pokemon character.
There you go. So Easy. What's so funny? Easy's credit card's getting rejected because he's broke. No, I'm just kidding.
Dude, I'm banned on Coinbase for 7 days.
Oh boy. All right. Well, there you go.
You want some money? You can just buy with a credit card.
No, that's the issue. It makes me ID verify because I had to send money from Coinbase, and because it wasn't a verified wallet, it hit me. So I'm moving some Solana to Polygon USDC right now. It should take a quick moment.
We just had DDS rip this guy. What are we looking at here? It's a 1997 Rocket Gang Dark Flareon. It's a CGC 10.
Dark Flareon.
Damn.
What we're getting with, I'm not even going to say that price. So that one's an L. Well, here, I'll do it once more.
Rip another.
If someone pointed out the odds of pulling a banger are just going up as we don't pull the good ones. You know what I mean?
I don't have my credit card right here. Give me 1 second.
All right, Nick will be back in a second. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, we are ripping Pokemon card packs from the Courtyard Bodagos collab Pokemon card drop at courtyard.io. Very, very fun stuff. We've twisted Courtyard's arm to let us reveal early so we could do it on the show today. And so that's happening right now. What's this one?
This is a Rugia. I just call him Rug. But this is what he
Rugi. Huge Bodagos whale. Badass. He actually pulled a... very high value Pikachu card that was like $4,000 or something before on Courtyard. So he's had Courtyard success before.
Oh, Chinchu Hollow. So the key there is it's not worth a lot.
OX Dosa just ripped 3. They got a Mew, a Dark Charmeleon, which is damn, this looks good.
That's a good one.
And an Aerodactyl, just like Yu-Gi-Oh.
Nice. Mine was different than that one, but yeah.
So
Nick's ready to cook. One more pack. This is Easy's pack on behalf of Nick here.
I'm buying one.
Oh, we got Easy doing it.
Okay. I'm buying it.
Is Steve P being serious? He said he got a 1999 Charizard Hollow. If Steve's being serious, that's a huge W for Steve.
Steve P, tweet at us. Let us know what you got.
Say no, that's not good. Just send it to my wallet, dude.
Real quick, Nick. What is this? General Pudge just ripped this. Dude, this looks sick. What are we looking at here?
10 out of 10, 2019 Mega Sableye and Tyranitar GX.
I don't even know what that is. I want to share my own screen real quick. Right.
I'm sharing. I'm up.
Easy's up. All right, watch, dude, guys.
Here we go. If Easy gets the best one, I'm gonna be so pissed.
Let's go.
Here we go. Big money. All
right, sign the message. Opening.
Big money.
99 Neo Premium
Totodile.
No symbol. Japanese card. Gem Mint 10.
Neo Premium Totodile. CGC 10. Let's see. What do we got?
50 beans.
So, okay. And we got one more to rip. One more to rip here. Let's party. Last one.
Share this.
Nick is about to share.
Correct screen.
Here we go. Open pack.
Big money, Mickey. Big money.
Let's go. All this means is that the rare cards are just so much higher in here. Just a much higher chance.
Straight up. Phantom's Goldluck Hollow.
Let's go. A beautiful card. Beautiful card.
2006. Oh, here we go. You got it right here.
Ouch.
PSA 10 is 74. Yeah,
all right, rip another. Rip another.
No.
The gambling addict's coming out. Nick, just keep going. We're just getting closer to the chase card. Just keep ripping. You can make hell back in one pack.
This first one that I got was actually pretty good. And yeah. So I'm happy with that one. I may even redeem it, go through the process of getting it delivered to my apartment here, because I don't have any graded cards. And I think that that's a cool asset to have sitting at my place. Adds to my varied collectibles. You know,
you have varied collectibles. You definitely do. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for watching the show. Big shout out to Ram for joining us. Ram Alawalia. You should follow him on Twitter. Clemente has his profile pinned to the top of the Twitter Spaces stage. If it's your first time listening, we do the show Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time each and every week. It's available on several different platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, YouTube, X platform video, and more. We will be back on Monday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. Check out the courtyard.io Bodagos and Courtyard Modern Collectors Pack. We did a really cool artwork for this collab drop. We just opened some Pokemon cards right here on the show. Anyway, we will catch you guys Monday. Thanks for listening. See